Hello, everybody, and welcome to this edition of the Four Wide Salute podcast. I am TJ Lane, along with Brandon Stegall.
Hey, everybody.
On this podcast today, we are going to talk about the NASCAR Cup Series 2020 schedule that just came out. And Brandon, one thing's for sure, there was some most wholesale changes we've seen with the schedule in the NASCAR modern era, for sure.
They have definitely shook things up, and it was actually a pretty well-kept secret. Only a very few things leaked out a day or two before the announcement.
Yeah, that's something that was a surprise with it. It seems like it was right the day of the announcement that, most of the stuff started leaking out. So that was it was definitely a very well-kept secret for all the change that was there.
Yeah, that's something that you thought that day and time was over with all the internet and everybody having their connections in the media with getting leaks out, but some pleasant surprises and some real shockers.
Oh, as we go through and look at it here, we'll just start at the very beginning of it. So the season is starting on Sunday, February 16th, 2020, with the Daytona 500. I know there were rumors going around that NASCAR was maybe looking at having the Daytona 500 not be the first race of the season. But Brandon, one thing I will say is I'm very glad that they've kept the 500 as the first race of the year.
I think that follows under the pleasant surprises, and we'll talk about it more later on. But I think was what ended up happening that might have been a decoy leak to get people excited and then relieved. But Speed Weeks and the Daytona 500, it's definitely tradition to kick off not just the NASCAR season, but all of American motorsports in the United States there.
And to me, that's something that just never made sense to me to try to start the season with any other race besides the Daytona 500. I mean, I think that's something that gives NASCAR such a big advantage is the season starts out with the absolute biggest race of the year, and there's so much hype that goes into it. You know, you've got your biggest race of the year at a time of the year where it's kind of a lull, you know, with not a lot going on with the different stick and ball sports. So I just I think it's something that works out perfect doing that, and I think going away from that would be a very big mistake.
I know that we used to go out to California and start the season at Riverside in January, long before your and I's time, but it would not be the end of the world if they scheduled a race earlier. However, it'd feel really weird, and I feel like it'd also be missed opportunity because the clash and the qualifying races along with the Daytona 500 as part of Speed Weeks. You get that opening weekend feel. You get the Super Bowl kind of feel. And I believe you would just lose something not being the opening event.
Well, as we move off the Daytona 500 and we go on through the schedule, Brandon, one thing I was really glad to see, and I think it just makes sense to do, is that we're starting a West Coast swing right after Daytona. I think that's a good thing to go to Vegas, California, and Phoenix right after the 500. I always thought that was unfair to have the Atlanta Motor Speedway race the second weekend of the year there, you know, going into, into the month of February. I felt like that's kind of giving that track a tough date to work with weather-wise because, I mean, heck, it's February in Georgia. You never know what the weather can be. So I think that's another good move that they made to start the West Coast swing out right after Daytona and then move on into Atlanta on March 15th.
Your opinion is the popular opinion, but I'm not sold. Everybody always mentioned the weather issues at Atlanta, but I remember weather being an issue in November and September and in March. And I felt like that it gave a unique opportunity that if you wanted to be around the second half of Daytona Speed Weeks, you could drive up I-75 and stop off at Atlanta and watch the second race of the season. And I'm not sure how many people actually took advantage of that, but I felt like it was a very unique opportunity. And in all the years that it was – the last weekend of February or the first weekend of March, according to how the calendar fell, I don't believe we were ever rain delayed to the next day. It was threatening. It was cool, but it's still the South, and it's better weather there than some places, though going to the West Coast sooner, it probably is better odds of warm weather.
I think you're right about that. That the race never got delayed to the Monday, but I do know that that several years that they had it there was the second week. You had weather threatening, whether it was a Sunday race or the Saturday truck and Xfinity races. You had that threatening weather, and I think that kind of goes along with how things are with NASCAR these days. Used to you had so many of the tickets pre-sold that if you had threatening weather for the races, it really wasn't that big of a deal because everybody already had their tickets bought. But with these days, I think the tracks are depending more and more on that walk-in crowd. It's kind of gotten to the same thing it's got with the dirt track racing, where the threat of rain is very very detrimental to the crowd. So I think that's something that may play a factor there.
I think Atlanta was happy to move off the date. However, I do feel like there was something lost there. Is it a major loss? No, it's not.
I think one thing that was a major gain with this schedule is moving Martinsville to the month of May, because they've also had some issues at times with having their race in early March, but making that a night race, that is something that I am absolutely stoked about, Brandon.
Mother's Day weekend, I think that's the only negative that anyone could ever mention about the weekend in which Martinsville's moving to. It might make it hard for some sons to come to the event, but I think for the most part, everybody is going to find a way to show up, and it's going to be a good time in Martinsville under the lights. I was at Martinsville in 2017 when the race finished under the lights, and boy, it was electric. Literally flipped the switch and it was electric. And I'm very looking forward to the first official night race to see what happens. And it might just be the spark that the spring race at Martinsville needed.
I think it's going to be great. It just, like you said, with turning the lights on, there's just something about doing that. It just creates an atmosphere unlike any other. I've never been to the Bristol night race in person. I've been to the day race several times, but just from watching it on TV, it just seems like the difference between the Bristol day race and the Bristol night race, that night race, the atmosphere just seems so great. I mean, you can even sense that on TV, and I know that you go to both races every year, Brandon.
Yes, and there's just it's something that it's immeasurable, but you feel it there for the night race at Bristol. And I fully expect the night race at Martinsville to be the same way, even though it's in the spring. And like I mentioned before, I think that could be very exciting for Martinsville to have that night race in the spring, because the last two or three years, there's been this big disconnect between the playoff Martinsville race in the fall and then the lack of aggression, maybe lack of interest in the spring race at Martinsville when we know what the potential is. And now we've given it that something extra.
I think with having that race date with Martinsville, with it going to the May 9th race date, the only thing that I could see that may be a potential negative with it, if there's any at all, is so you've got Martinsville May 9th, and the next Saturday night you've got the NASCAR All-Star Race at Charlotte. Then the week after that, of course, is a Coke 600 at Charlotte. And what some people may not realize is that Martinsville Speedway is actually only 2 hours away from Charlotte Motor Speedway. So do you think that's something that could possibly affect crowds where it's so much racing going on in that Charlotte area, Brandon?
I think that will be Charlotte's problem. I don't believe it will be Martinsville's problem. I don't think anybody hides the fact that the racing at Charlotte's not being what you would hope for it to be. I think there was some hope with the new package that it would be different, but I think some of that hope is kind of wavered off, and we'll have to see what this year brings for Charlotte Motor Speedway as far as the kind of action that will, of course, influence what 2020 ticket sales are. But I think that could be an issue for Charlotte, being saturated for three weekends in that area, and it's $90 to $150 ticket for each event.
I know for me, I like going to Martinsville, and I also like going to the NASCAR All-Star Race, but, it's about a 4.5-hour drive for me to get to Martinsville. It's a five-hour drive to get to Charlotte, and you know, I would say for me, I'm not going to be making both trips back to back. So, but I would say that I'll definitely be at Martinsville. That's something I'm not going to miss, a good old short track race. So yeah, I agree with you on that. I think if anybody would suffer any bit at all from it, it could be Charlotte. But you know, hey, one thing that could be good is, you know, that is a lot of racing for that area, and you know, maybe that's a good thing. And you know, all the short tracks kind of get together and make kind of like a speed week thing out of it. You never know what could happen there. There's definitely some potential.
I definitely think that they should work together and get with the short tracks and the Cars Tour and whoever else to make some kind of summer speed weeks. Will it happen? I'm not real optimistic, but it'd be cool. And I really think this is only going to be a one-year problem. I think you're going to see that All-Star race go to a different facility in 2021. But we'll talk about that at a different time.
One of the biggest changes with the schedule as we move on through, we go to the month of June. For the first time ever, we're going to have a Cup Series doubleheader at Pocono Raceway. We're going to get both of the Pocono stops out of the way on one weekend. It's going to be a Saturday race at Pocono and a Sunday race at Pocono. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk about doubleheaders, and it looks like it's definitely finally going to happen.
I'm less excited about the doubleheader per se. Now we're just going to Pocono once. Yeah, we're racing twice, but now we don't have two weekends where it's like, ugh, Pocono. They go once, they race twice, and we get it over with.
That's a good thing about it, because I'm the same way. That's probably my least favorite track on the circuit's Pocono. I think a lot of fans would say that too. The only issues I see with this is we know that in the Pocono Mountains that weather is always an issue usually, and you know, with Pocono not being a track that has lights or anything, I could see the potential for that to be a logistics nightmare if you would have, you know, if you'd end up having bad weather for both of the days.
And we don't know what the rest of the undercard is going to be. We don't know if there's going to be a Xfinity race with the Sunday race and a truck race with the Saturday race. We don't know if they're going to try to run some kind of triple header on Saturday. We don't know yet, but definitely a track that's had weather issues, doesn't have lights. It's a bit of a gamble, and you know, maybe they help themselves out and help some of the fans out. Maybe they do two 500 kilometer races, which would be roughly 312 miles, and kind of shorten that up and get some bang for the buck in a hurry.
I thought you brought up an interesting point there with the support races, with what they're going to have with the Xfinity Series or Truck Series. And when I first saw this, that's one thing I'm thinking is, you know, maybe they don't have either one of them show up there. Maybe that opens the door for maybe one of those series to go to Nashville for the 2020 season.
I don't think we'll see that next year. The Xfinity Series will almost certainly be at Pocono because Xfinity is located there in Philadelphia, if I'm not mistaken. So that's their market. That's where they bring their executives and their people out to show them a good time and show them the series. So that is going to stay. I would be absolutely shocked if it's not. The Truck Series, I'm not sure. Maybe Pocono would let that one go away and they could run somewhere else. But I wouldn't be surprised if they find a way to get all three series to run four races in 2 days.
As we move on to the next week after Pocono, this is a schedule change that I'm not very happy about, and I'm probably going to go on a little rant with it. Is we're moving the Coke Zero 400, might as well call it the Firecracker 400. It's called the Firecracker 400 because it's ran on 4th of July weekend, and we're taking that away from Daytona, and we're moving the July 4th weekend race to Indianapolis Motor Speedway, a place that was moved to the fall due to hot temperatures. It's back to the month of July, and I just have to wonder, have we not learned anything about what we did when we moved the Southern 500 off of Labor Day weekend? It's just not a good move to me. I know they're moving it to the, you know, Daytona is going to be the regular season finale, but I think what it gains for that, it sure doesn't make up for what it's lost taking out of that holiday weekend.
That is where we have taken our biggest shot at tradition. Daytona and the Firecracker 400, it's been tradition since 1959 when the big track opened. They ran it on the 4th of July, no matter where it was in the week, for a long time. And then 4th of July weekend, when they moved it under the lights for the first time, it turned it into a real spectacle. And now here we are about 20 years later, and now we're removing it from the 4th of July weekend slot. It definitely is going to mess with a lot of people's vacations, kind of tug at the heartstrings, because tradition still matters in sports, and a lot of people forget that.
I just don't see it being a move that's going to benefit either track. You know, like you said, with the vacations, I think there's a lot of people that like to plan their summer, their summertime vacation in they're at Daytona. And I would say that that's definitely a weekend that there's a lot of people that's there in Daytona, just taking their vacation and they're there and they see the race going on. So, hey, that's something else to do. They want to show up for the race. So I definitely don't think there's going to be near as many people that's going to be in the Daytona Beach area when they run it on the 29th of August compared to 4th of July weekend. So, I really think it's going to hurt the crowd for Daytona. And I just don't think it's going to help Indy any. I felt like moving Indy to the last race of the regular season was a good move. I know last year that the weather didn't work out good for him, but that's something that can happen any weekend of the year. You just don't know how that's going to go. I thought that added something to Indy making it the last race of the regular season last year. I'm like you. It's just already been proven that messing with that tradition is just not a good thing, and it's like here we go again.
Well, let me play devil's advocate with you a little here on the Indianapolis date. No one in America loves racing like Indiana loves racing, and especially right around Indianapolis. And you know as well as I do that Independence Day weekend is racing weekend, and there will be all kinds of racing. And some dirt racing, some asphalt racing that will be going on in the week and weekend leading up to the Brickyard 400. They need to be able to tap into that, but it could really be a heck of a racing week at the Brickyard. And as far as giving up their last race of the regular season, I'm happy to see them move. I would have moved that date away from that race, because Indy is usually not a place that we get a surprise winner. It's hard to win there. Pit strategy can do it, but it's usually somebody with the fastest car. So it's by the time you get to Indy, usually everybody's locked in on points and it's somebody having to win. And then you also have the World 100 conflict that they had where the World 100 was running on Saturday night and the Brickyard was on Sunday, and that conflicted with the BC 39 and some of the other racing going on that supports the Brickyard traditionally.
That's the only thing that I can see being good with this is you brought up the point that by that time of the year, pretty much everybody's locked in, and the chances of seeing somebody new win at Indy's probably not as great. That's something that's going to add some excitement at Daytona, because we all know how Daytona is. It's wild. You can't predict what's going to happen. So it definitely gives somebody a chance to kind of, sneak in there with a win for the last race of the regular season. So that's definitely one positive to it, but I just go back to the tradition. I just think that's been a great American tradition, having that race 4th of July weekend at the Daytona International Speedway. And that's just something that I personally hate to see change.
I agree with the tradition. I would rather we keep Daytona with the 4th of July, but if it ran its traditional weekend, it would run actually on the 4th of July, and I feel like TV had a whole lot to do with that tradition getting changed, because TV didn't want the event on Saturday night because it's terrible ratings historically, and Daytona already tried a Sunday night deal once, and I don't think that they wanted to do that again. And while I'm on it, the first person I ever heard mention running a restrictor plate race for the regular season finale was Dale Earnhardt Jr. He was advocating to move Talladega up in the schedule to be the regular season finale. But it seems like whatever Jr. says happens in some form or another. It just happened that they moved Daytona instead.
Yeah, I could have definitely done better with it being Talladega that they moved, but hey, it's one of those things. It's the change that's been made, and we'll just have to see what happens with it. So as we go on and continue to look at the schedule, that takes us to the start of the playoffs, and we'll look at this on a round by round basis. And one thing I think that's definitely a positive move is this first round of the playoffs. Man, is it going to be interesting? It seems like used to that the first round was always kind of the dull round. You know, you didn't have a good mix of tracks. I'm really excited about them mixing up the tracks in the playoffs. So the first round, Brandon, we got Darlington. For the Southern 500, we've got Richmond and we got Bristol. We got two short tracks. We got Darlington. Now that's going to be awesome.
I've still not figured out how they did that, because they didn't move Darlington. It's on Labor Day weekend. It's exactly where it should be on the calendar. Yet somehow we've moved it back 2 weeks in the schedule to make it part of the playoffs. So I'm excited about it. Labor Day, the tradition should continue. I hope that we continue to learn that messing with tradition's not a great thing. And then you go and you look. Richmond actually has its traditional date back. It just happens to be in the playoff instead of the cutoff race because of how the schedule got shifted. And then we go to Bristol Motor Speedway to close out that round. And we did move Bristol back a few weeks. So it's going to be interesting to see what the tradition will say about that, because I'm a little conflicted, because the August date, it was something you could count on and look forward to, but it's still going to be Saturday night at Bristol, and there's going to be it's going to be a cut race. So there's going to be guys having to win and some guys that's wanting to protect, while somebody behind them is maybe wanting to really go for it.
I think the one thing that's going to be interesting with this, to see how it affects crowd wise with Bristol. They're in an area where college football is really big. So it'll be interesting to see if it hurts the crowd any with it kind of going up against the college football. But there's no doubt all that great atmosphere that makes the Bristol night race is still going to be there. And I think that's definitely going to add a lot to it, making it a cutoff race for the playoffs. I just hope that the race maybe doesn't lose some of its intensity because guys maybe, you know, try to race the playoff guys, you know, easy.
That's my only concern, is the storylines going into the race and the hype is going to be so large because we know what Bristol can be. But then when you roll the cars out of on the grid, there's going to be all these drivers not in the playoffs or already into the next round that don't want to mess somebody else up. So will we see that same hard, intense racing? Will it be all storylines, or will it actually be great racing? Because I've seen some playoff races where the storyline might be good, but the actual racing suffers.
As we go into the second round of the playoffs, I like the mix in this one too. You know, we're back to Las Vegas, and then we go to Talladega for plate racing, and then the cutoff race is once again at the Charlotte Motor Speedway Roval. So I think I think that's a great mix of tracks in round two as well, and I like it having a plate track in there and having a road course in there. That could really mix things up as well.
I don't know what Tums' marketing budget is, but I think they need to expand from the Tums' Heartburn Turn at the Roval at Charlotte to the Tums' Heartburn Round, because having Talladega and the Roval in the same round, there's going to be a lot of crew chiefs and a lot of drivers have a lot of indigestion and heartburn during the round of 12.
Without a doubt, that's That could be maybe the most interesting round, because you know we all know how Talladega can be. It's just like Daytona. It's wild. You can't predict what's going to happen. And then we saw what happened at the Roval last year too, with these road course races in NASCAR. It's kind of the same way. So that's with that, you know, with having kind of those two tracks where all that can happen, I think it puts a lot of pressure on the guys at Las Vegas, because that's more of a that's, you know, that's a 1.5 mile track. That's more of a track where it's kind of calm, and you can kind of predict more what's going to happen. So I think I think those guys will put a lot of pressure on themselves to try to walk out of Vegas with a win in that round.
I think what you said is important to reflect on. It's usually more predictable and usually more calm, but I think we can throw that out the window because those guys are know what the next 2 weeks are. So they're going to go for it at Vegas to get that locked in spot. And I think we might see a repeat of last year's Vegas playoff race where it was chaos and a little bit of destruction along the way.
As we go into the final round before the championship race, we're at Kansas, then we go to Texas, and I absolutely love that the next to last race of the year, the final race you got to try to make in the championship four, is at Martinsville Speedway. I love that move. I think it's great, and I also think it's great that we got two mile and a half in that round, because that's no doubt probably the most important round, because that's what's going to put you in the championship four. And even though I'm not a big fan of the mile and a half, so that's what we race on more often than any other type of track. So I think it's good that if we're going to have a round with 2 mile and a half, so I think the last round needs to be the one.
I think you look at Kansas and Texas, and you think, boy, this round is ho-hum. But then you look at that Martinsville date, and you know what's on the line. I mean, we've seen it where it was the opener where everybody had to win or felt they had to win. But now you're going to have two guys that are locked in, but you're going to have everybody else in must win. Instead of thinking they got to, there's going to be a lot of guys knowing they have to. And what will they be willing to do late in the race? We saw what Logano did, and it caused a stir. We saw what happened between Denny and Chase, and I think this just helps everybody's intensity to raise just a little bit more, and it's going to be a heck of a send-off into the championship round.
I think Martinsville was the perfect place to have that for the last race of the last round to get into the championship four, because let's face it, it's been at Phoenix ever since we've had the playoffs, and I mean, in all these years, the only thing exciting I can think of that's happened at Phoenix for that race has been maybe the year that Ryan Newman moved Kyle Larson to make it into the championship four. That's the only exciting thing that can happen that I've seen that's happened, which brings us into a move that I'm not happy at all about, is we're taking championship weekend from Homestead and we're moving it to Phoenix, which, in my opinion, ranks right up with Pocono as a place that just does not produce very good racing.
This is the second of the two moves that have fans split, and some upset and some love it. But the championship round will be in Phoenix, ISM Raceway. I describe ISM as a lot of ho-hum races with a few exciting finishes. You look a couple years ago when Logano won Phoenix and end up Matt Kenseth got turned, a late race move that would have locked Kenseth into the championship four, and Logano ended up making it onto the championship four. I believe it was 2016 where Joey ended up getting in the Carl, but that and Newman's moves are the only two that really pop out to me as far as that's, you know, something that's happened crazy or exciting. A lot of the racing, you know, is ho-hum, except for off the restarts where a lot of drivers take the exit off the backstretch.
We've taken the championship race from a track that was a true driver's track in Homestead. Those guys could run every inch of that track. It was a place where the drivers really, really, really could make a difference. So we've taken that away to a place where it's all about track position. It's been that way in the best racing package that NASCAR has had. It's a track that doesn't widen out very much, and it's a track position race. And I just it may be harsh to say, but I think we've taken it from a from a place that guys can race onto it to a place that they can't race on. They just have to ride in line. And I'm just absolutely disgusted by the move.
I think that we just a few weeks ago saw a race at Phoenix that was very hard to watch and very disappointing. And I want to talk a little bit about Homestead as well, as Homestead is actually my second favorite track on the circuit, only to Bristol. I was able to go to Homestead in 2017. It's a beautiful facility. It's a very unique place, and you could absolutely race all over it. The tire fall off made the long runs really interesting and exciting. It was actually the short runs that were kind of a bummer. And, you know, if you want to look at the legitimacy of the NASCAR championship, you look at what compromises the championship, and we have these rounds that you succeed through, and then you go to a winner take all one race. Well, that one race is a track that we race at, a type of track that we race at only three times in 36, a flat 1 mile oval. And one of the three, two of the three races are at the same track, and the other is in Loudoun. And none of those are ones that you'll hear a lot of fans be excited about and say that's some of the best racing. While the track that we just moved from is a mile and a half track, which, like it or not, that is the majority of what we do in the sport. So at least we crown our champion on the kind of track that they have to encounter the most. And not was it not just only a mile and a half that they had that going for it, but it was the best mile and a half track on the circuit, where you could move around and not just be stuck in somebody else's dirty air, and the driver could really make a difference because of the shape, the abrasive banking, and the fall off in the tires because of the abrasive surface.
That's a great point you bring up there, because you're right. If we're going to have this playoff format where one race, how you do that one race is going to determine who your champion is, you need to have it at a track that's most like what you race at for the entire year. I mean, that's only what makes sense, and I agree with you. That's what you had at Homestead, because it's most like all the tracks that we run on. Even take like Bristol. You know, that's a place that they'll run the wall and they'll move around and they'll run multi grooves. You know, I know Bristol's a half mile track, and Homestead it's a lot bigger track at the mile and a half, but still it's the same concepts that go with it. It's a place that you can go out there and you know take your car around and move around on. And I just think you're just really I think you're really taking it out of the driver's hands, so to speak, and you're just putting it into a place that somebody could get lucky and stay out on a late race caution and win it because of track position. And that's just, I think it kind of degrades the championship a little bit even.
I agree with that, but you know, even if you look off the track, like I said, I was fortunate enough to go in 2017, and it's a real vacation destination. You watch the races, you get to enjoy the warm weather, the palm trees, and you know, the morning of the races, if you want to go out, or the day after the championship race, you can go to Miami Beach or Key West and really enjoy real vacation on the beach. And the only other time you can do that's Daytona. And it was just this event that was bigger than just the championship in a way, because of what you had in that area.
One thing that I've always been told, and in my life, I found it to be 100% true, and that is, do not try to fix what's not broken. And there was nothing wrong with having the championship race at Homestead. I mean, we've done it since 2002. That's where we've ended the season at. And we've had great races there. I mean, ever since they got the track reconfigured to its current configuration, I mean, I can't think of a race there that's been bad. I mean, we've had good racing. We've had those big moments. It's been racing that's been as far as the crowds, it's drawn good crowds for the championship weekend. It's just truly one of those things that there's just, to me, there's just no good reason to to try to change this and move it away from there, which I'm sure, you know, it'll eventually come out. The reason it's done is I'm sure with Ford backing off of sponsoring the championship weekend, there's probably a sponsor that's out west that's paying the money to have it there.
I could stomach the move to Phoenix if part of the announcement was we're going to start a rotation of tracks for the championship event. I think that would be proper, although honestly, I don't know that would be better than having it at Homestead for the reasons we mentioned. But if it was a rotation, I think that would make sense. But that's not what the announcement was. The announcement was that we're moving it to Phoenix, and it's probably going to be in Phoenix for a few years. And you're probably right. It's probably sponsor-related.
Yeah, and you know, when you look at Homestead, I mean, what's it going to do to that track? Because you've taken this as a championship race, and you're moving it to an early spring race. I mean, it just it seems to me like it's definitely going to be a bad thing for Homestead as far as you know trying to draw the crowd in and all that. But for Phoenix, I'm not sure how much you really help it, because Phoenix already had a really good spot for their second date, because that was the last race of the final round to get you into the championship four. So you know they already had something big there, and I mean, I don't think that the net gain for Phoenix is near as much to compensate the net loss that you give Homestead Miami.
Homestead Miami has sold out every year since we've went to this current championship format in 2014. Phoenix generally sells out every fall for the last several years with the date that they already had. So in some ways, you can't gain on Phoenix, though there's more than just grandstand seating, and they can probably pack some more people in there, especially with the Rattlesnake Hill. But that the gain you can see is going to be limited. While you look at Homestead, you've taken away the championship, so a lot of people are going to lose interest. You've moved it to March, so you've went from November, that was a good off-season looking at vacation time on the beach and stuff. It was off-season that you could go get warm weather and have a really nice vacation around the championship racing. Now in March, are a lot of people going to say, okay, I want to go to Homestead and watch the race and go to the beach in March? I think we've already done that in February.
Yep, it just goes back to what I said. Why are we trying to fix what's not broken? I think I think there's so many positives that are on this schedule shakeup, but it's just I think this is one that's just hard to get past moving that championship race to Phoenix. It just it kind of, to me, what we've done with that kind of takes away a lot of the good things that they've done with the schedule to me.
But you know what, TJ? If we don't have cars we can race with, none of it will matter anyway.
Yeah, that's the absolute truth. You know, there's no doubt, and we've done a couple podcasts about it. With the racing with this package, I think it's just getting worse every week. You know, we saw a race at Martinsville that was affected by aerodynamics. That's never happened. And if it's affecting Martinsville, what's it going to do at all these other tracks? So yeah, I mean, it's in the big picture, this schedule thing and the reaction to the schedule is maybe the least of NASCAR's problems. They're definitely going to have to try to do something to fix this racing.
As we wait to see what the direction of the package goes for the rest of this year and next year, as we wait for the Xfinity and Truck Series schedules, especially as it relates to Pocono, I think for maybe the first time, this schedule actually raises more questions than it answers.
Yeah, because if nothing changes with the package, and you know, we roll into Phoenix with the last race, I mean, you know, like you said, we already saw how that was a few weeks ago. It was a race where it was next to impossible to pass, except for the restarts. And you know, and you know, if we have that style of racing for the championship race, oh my gosh, that's not going to do anything to help grow the sport.
We've got to get there first, but 2021 is when we can see real shakeup, because we can see more short tracks and new tracks. And I hopefully we can get there. Hopefully we do things to to create excitement. I think the schedule has created some excitement. There's also created some questions and some and a little bit of backlash already, but it's got us talking, and that can't be all bad, can it?
No. I you know, with NASCAR this year, they've seen an increase in ratings for almost every race. They've seen an increase with the attendance, I think, at probably most races this year. I would say that a good part of that's because of all the hype that's been around the new package. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely a good thing to get people talking, but you're going to have to produce, you know, with all the hype about the package. Yeah, you may get people's attention to get a tune in, but if they're not seeing good racing, they're going to go right back away. So, and I think it's the same thing with this, with the schedule. You know, there's a lot of stuff that looks good with it on paper. There's some stuff that looks bad, but the bottom line is, Brandon, as we wrap up, they're going to have to do something to try to fix this with the package and make the racing better.
The day of reckoning is coming. There's a lot of different ways that this could go, and I think it's just going to be interesting what time tells, what the direction is with the Gen 7, with the 2021 schedule. Any of you that are listening to this, tell us what you think. Is the schedule good? Is it bad? Is it indifferent? Where do you see the sport going? And check us out on Facebook, on Twitter, at 4Wide_Salute. Let us know what you think. Find us anywhere that you listen to podcasts. Until the next episode, guys.